Welcome to the Sports Ethicist Show, coming to you from the basement of Burpee on the campus of Rockford University in Sportstown, USA, Rockford, Illinois. I am Sean Klein, the Sports Ethicist. The Sports Ethicist Show discusses the many ethical and philosophical issues that arise in and around sport. You can read the Sports Ethicist blog at sportsethicist.com, where you can also download the podcasts of previous shows, subscribe to the podcast, or find links to related information. The Sports Ethicist is also on Facebook and on Twitter at Sports Ethicist. You can email the show at sportsethicist@gmail.com. One of the frequent themes of this show is the role and value of being a fan. Sports fandom is a funny sort of thing. While it provides great entertainment and excitement, it can also be frustrating and painful. The pleasure of winning is transcendent, but the pain of losing can last for decades. So why be a fan? Well, the presumption is that either the overall pleasure outweighs the pain, or that there is some deeper value gained by being a sports fan. And this raises two questions. Just what is that value? And is it a value for everyone? That is, if you aren't a sports fan, should you be? Today's show focuses on these and related issues with our guest, Gwen Bradford. Dr. Bradford is an assistant professor of philosophy at Rice University in Houston, Texas. And during the 2013-2014 academic year, she is a faculty fellow at the Murphy Institute at Tulane University. She works in value theory and normative ethics. The central focus of her research investigates the nature of achievements and what makes them valuable. Welcome to the show, Gwen.
Hi, it's great to be here.
So we're going to be focusing our discussion today off your paper, Being a Sports Fan, Paradox and Intrinsic Value, that you presented at the IAPS, the International Association for the Philosophy of Sport, conference back last September already. So I was hoping you could summarize the main argument, the main idea of the paper, and your motivations or your reasons for writing it about this particular issue.
Yeah, sure. So I started thinking about being a sports fan because, as it happens, I myself am not really a fan of sports. I mean, I like sports. I kind of appreciate it. I can appreciate athletic excellence and all that. But I was seeing all these people around me who just love it, and they were getting so much out of it. And I was thinking, I wonder if I'm missing out. I feel like I'm missing out. And so I thought, well, should I cultivate this interest? Should I start to become a fan? Is there anything that's good in itself about being a fan? Now, obviously, a lot of people who enjoy sports and enjoy being a fan, there's this connection to well-being, which seems pretty obvious. But of course, this is really contingent. It depends what you like. And so what I got curious about is whether or not we should cultivate this interest independently from any relationship that being a fan might have to our well-being. That was my question. Is there anything that's good or bad in itself about being a fan, regardless of any instrumental considerations? And of course, there are different ways to be a fan. But the kind of fan that I was the most interested in was the sort of typical, the way that most people, I think, are fans, these so-called partisan fans.
Right.
Your typical American football fan or your hockey fan, baseball fan, they've got a team, they stick to their team, they follow them throughout the season, they care deeply about the team, they want them to win, happy when they win, sad when they lose. So this I take it is actually essential really to being a fan, is that you love the team and you want their success and you're happy when they win, sad when they lose. Now it just so happens that this is quite promising because there's this tradition in value theory that concerns loving the good. So, insofar as fans love something, if that thing is good, then we might have something value theoretic that we can talk about. So there's this idea that loving the good is itself intrinsically good. So if you have some intrinsic value, like truth or beauty or achievement, and so that intrinsic value is there, and then you love this thing or you appreciate it, you wish for it, you desire it, your appreciation or loving or desiring of this good is itself good. And conversely, if there's some bad thing like pain or evil, and you have a negative attitude towards the bad thing, you hate the bad thing, your hatred of the bad thing is itself good. There's this sort of matching that takes place. So here we have this nice value theoretic principle, which I've dubbed the Amare Bonum Bonus. It's got other names in other contexts, like recursion. But it seems that there's something like that that goes on in being a fan, insofar as the success of the team, if that's something that's good, and you, as a fan, you love that, or you appreciate it, you wish for it, you hope for it, then what you're appreciating, your appreciation itself is good. So it seems that there is this positive intrinsic value in loving the good when you are being a sports fan. Sounds quite promising.
Yeah.
So
what's the problem?
Side, of course, is that when you're a fan, you don't just love your own team and their success. That entails, in fact, it might even be more important, that you also hate the rivals and you want them to lose. In fact, for many sports fans, this is even just sort of part of it. You know, if you're a Sox fan, you have to also really hate the Yankees and
yes.
stuff like that. And there's not really being a good Sox fan if you don't really care what the Yankees are doing. You have to hate them. You have to want them to fail.
Yeah, I am a Red Sox fan, and so obviously I don't have good feelings towards the Yankees.
Right on.
And it's hard to even, as you said, really conceptualize what it would be to be a Red Sox fan but be neutral about the Yankees. Those seem conceptually linked. To be a Red Sox fan is to root against the Yankees. And then I think that goes, that's not just in the Red Sox-Yankees rivalry, but all sorts of rivalries, Alabama, Auburn, Manchester United, Man City, and so on across the world. So it's not just even a uniquely American thing either.
Right, I think so. And now, interestingly, even if it weren't, I think that the little puzzle that arises that I'm about to describe would apply anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the catch, right? Because, of course, if the good of being a fan is a matter of loving and appreciating the success of your team, and if that comes part and parcel with hating the rivals and wishing for them not to succeed, what this very same value theoretic principle that tells us that being a fan is good also tells us that being a fan is bad, because there's this good thing, winning and success, that the opponents could have, and being a fan means that you don't want them to have it, and you hate it when they have it, and you're sad when they have it.
Right.
And according to this value theoretic principle, that kind of relation itself is bad. So having negative attitudes towards things that are positively good is bad. So here we have this fun little twist. So the reason why, even if you don't hate the rival, because most games involve, just part and parcel of what it is to be a game, is there's a winner and a loser, at least in most sports that we're considering here. So if you're rooting for one side, it just entails that you're rooting for the other side to not win,
right.
To lose. And so there you have it. There's this little, it looked like things were going really well for being a sports fan for a minute there, but it turns out there's this funny sort of value theoretic tension.
And then so how do you go about resolving that tension? Because you talk a little bit about that in your paper.
Yeah, so I think the best that we can say is that, there are lots of goods and bads in the world, and you can't possibly go around appreciating all the good that's there and hating all the bad that's there. So it's helpful to have these sort of methods of carving out a zone of good that we are going to really, really appreciate in depth for all it's worth. And I think that being a fan is a way of doing that. It's a way of sort of carving out sort of like being a connoisseur is a way of carving out a little zone of goods in which you can really appreciate those goods, perhaps at the expense of failing to appreciate other things as those things might be worthy of appreciation, but you at least really get to dig to the depth of the good that's here. So, and there's a sense in which maybe being a fan has this going for it.
Mm-hmm. And then, so it's a bit of a kind of balancing then that, yeah, there's going to be some negative aspect to the fandom, but there's this positive aspect, and that's what we're cultivating there. We're cultivating that the love of the good there. Is that part of the solution? And then we're sort of just leaving aside the bad?
I think that's part of the solution. I mean, I don't really think that tension is going to go away. Mm-hmm. So I think there's sort of always this sort of peculiar value theoretic tension in being a fan that just seems to be there. So,
Well, it's also there, I think, just sort of phenomenologically or just, you know, descriptively from the fan's perspective, I think, that when you do think about being a fan, it is an odd sort of thing. Like I said in the introduction, it's this funny sort of thing because it's not, you know, if you go, you know, one of the examples you talked about was opera, and you talked about being a connoisseur, so wine and other foods maybe, and just other experiences that we can go to because they're part of loving the good, because we appreciate the experience and so on. There isn't sort of a bad side. I guess you can indulge it too much, and that can bring out a negative, but that seems separate from what we're talking about. There isn't sort of a negative aspect to, you know, going to the opera. You go, you enjoy the experience, you glory in the music and in the singing and whatnot and in the narrative story. But you're unlikely to walk away with a negative experience, unless it was just a bad performance, right? But again, that seems something different, that if the performance is a good performance and you're a fan of the opera, you're going to appreciate it. Whereas with sport, it could be a good performance, a good game, people play well, and so on, and your team loses, and so it can still be a negative experience, and you can walk away upset, pained, saddened, and depressed, and it's other fandoms aren't really like that, I guess. And, you know, if your show gets canceled, you know, like Firefly fans, then you're going to be upset, but it's not from the show itself. Do you know what I mean?
Oh yes, right on. Yeah, I think that really characterizes this aspect of it really nicely. I mean, there are lots of ways you could be disappointed with a music performance, you know, or, you know, getting caught up in the storyline. If it's an opera that's about a tragedy, you might be moved by these things. But it's certainly not the way that you feel when your team loses, right? Which is just total disappointment, right? You hate that. You don't want that. You might sort of appreciate the game well played, but there's this real loss and disappointment, and or maybe bitterness even, mm-hmm. that the rivals have won.
Absolutely.
So it's real, which is funny because, of course, it's somebody else's success. It's not your team's success. It's the other team's success. And this, so which itself is a good thing, right? It's success is good. But now it turns out that this is causing sports fans of the rivals who have lost to feel bad and feel these negative attitudes towards that good thing.
Right.
It's unique to being a sports fan, for sure.
Yeah, because, I mean, even, as you mentioned, the tragedy, certainly you can be upset and pained by watching a performance, because it's a tragic performance or it's a tragic movie, you know, Schindler's List or something. But it's sort of a cathartic experience that you have. I mean, you know, depending on what your theory of drama and tragedy is, that there does seem to be something that attracts us to it because of that cathartic element, which isn't really there in sport. I mean, it's not like you get, there are some fans that I think are driven by a sense of their own misery, but like Cubs fans or something, they're just sort of, they stick with their, or Red Sox fans until 2004. You know, we kind of stick with it, and there's a sort of glory in our ineptitude. But, you know, I kind of got off track there. But, yeah, so the tragic element, the cathartic element in a drama does seem different. Like, as sports fans, I don't think, go to a match in order to feel a catharsis and a release of or whatever's going on in cathartic. I don't want to get into drama theory and stuff, but whatever's going on into in our experience of catharsis and why we like it and why it might be important psychologically, that doesn't seem to be what's going on in the pain of a sports fan. I mean, I've been through, as a sports fan, I've been through some just, exhilarating pleasure, but also the depths of the worst kind of pain, at least within the context of sport. You know, I was at the Super Bowl with the Patriots when they lost to the Giants, and they blew the perfect season, and that was not pleasant at all. And it still, as you said, bitterness. That was 7 years ago. I'm still embittered by it. And when I talk to fellow Patriots fans, we still can get worked up about it. Still, you know, the pain is still sort of right there on the surface, which is again different, I think, from other circumstances. So that tension there between the experience of being a fan, I think, is in part captured by this dual nature, the paradox that you're talking about in terms of the loving the good and but also at the same time hating the good. Although I think it's different, it's related, but I think there is something there, because the hatred does seem to be, although hatred might be too strong, but that dislike of your rival and the wish for them not to succeed is there and is a part of competition, and it's one reason why some people are critical of competition. But you seem to want to sort of rescue it, and you talk about the nature of rivalry. So what is the rival aspect? How does that play into helping to possibly resolve the tension?
Well, I'm not sure that it does. I think that the rivalry thing is actually where the tension is. So that's kind of that's the real sort of puzzling or paradoxical part of it. But interestingly, what you just described, that when you feel the pain of the loss so in such a serious way, that, as it turns out, is actually part of the redeeming features of this view of how to look at being a fan. Because, of course, losing, one might think that losing is not a good thing. And so the appropriate attitude to have towards losing, of course, is a negative attitude, to feel this sorrow and disappointment. And so you've got this, your team has just lost, and so they had this opportunity for achievement, and instead it results in failure. And failure, one might think, losing is bad. And so the right way to feel, so the what the Amare Bonum Bonus would say is a good attitude to have, an intrinsically good attitude to have, is exactly what you've just described, is deep sorrow and disappointment. So as it happens, actually, the sort of the hard part of being a fan, the sadness with the loss, that's actually a source of positive intrinsic value.
Okay.
On this view. So that is actually one of the redeeming features of it, that the pain is actually good. Now, it's the side of it that's paradoxical is in the rivalry, so it's when you hate the success of the opponent. And that, it seems, unfortunately, is entailed by the fact that you're pained by the loss of your own team. I mean, that's just what it is. One of those things has to take place. So that's how that all shakes out. And it's interesting that it is, I quite like how you pointed out how it's a very different feeling from, I don't really know what catharsis is either, but it's quite different from the pain and disappointment that you get when you hear a sad story or something like that. It's really not like that at all.
I'm not sure what the difference, I think there's probably a number of differences, but one difference, I think, at least for a sports fan versus, an experience at the theater or in movies or in a story, is the identification. A sports fan identifies with his team in a way that is deeper, I think, than any identification you might have with the protagonist of a story. And so when the drama unfolds in a story, you can feel empathy for the characters and go through that process. But I think the fan experiences the loss as something that happens to him or her. Whereas I think, you know, when something bad happens in a story, you don't experience it as something that's happening to you. You experience it as something that happens to a character that you really like, or appreciate, or don't want this bad thing to happen to them. And so it becomes tragic and you feel sad about it. But I think in terms of sports, it's something that's bad that happens to you, right? Is that...
Yeah. Oh, right on. I think probably in these cases where there's a story or a play and we feel the sorrow for the character when something bad happens to them, it's because we relate to them in a way, or sympathetic to them, mm-hmm. but it's not our pain, I think, in the way that you've just described that it is for sports fans. I mean, it seems to me that when you're a fan and your team loses, you're not feeling empathy for the team. It's the loss is yours somehow.
Yep.
And I find this really fascinating. I'm not sure that, I mean, I'd love to hear what psychologists think about this. this amazing phenomenon. That's exactly right. It's quite different from when you're watching actors on a stage. It's not a feeling of empathy. It's your own pain. You are experiencing pain at a loss that these other people have had, and there's this sort of deep identification where somehow it becomes your loss too. That's a bit of a mystery to me, but I guess that's how it feels, isn't it?
It does. I mean, it definitely does. And anecdotally, the teams that I've been, you know, deep fans of for most of my life, the Boston teams, the Red Sox, Patriots, and so on, those losses, the wins and losses I experience as something as good or bad is happening to me. And the loss is something that for example, during the Patriots season, when they lose, you know, the whole Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday is in a gloom. Maybe I'm just too weird, but it's common enough among other fans that I know it's not just me that they feel that way, and they feel even a sense of embarrassment if the team loses, a sense of pride when they win. I mean, it really is something that is happening, at least experientially phenomenologically to you as a fan. But then when I think about other sports that maybe I'm newer to, where I don't have as strong a connection to yet, or that I don't have a sense of the history or tradition, or it's just hasn't been woven into my identity, I don't experience it in that way. So I've been getting into the last couple of years into English soccer, the English Premier League, and been rooting I feel funny even calling myself a fan because I'm not quite a fan yet, I feel like, because I don't quite have that deep identification yet of Liverpool, and because they're connected to Boston, because the Boston the Red Sox ownership owns Liverpool, so it's an obvious choice for me. So I've been following them, and they've been doing well, but they've had losses, and when they lose, it's like, oh, that's too bad. But it doesn't, and when they win, oh, that's cool, but I don't, the excitement isn't there, and the pain and the pleasure don't go quite as deep, and it does feel more like the kind of thing that we're talking about more with watching a play or an opera, where it's something that's like, okay, I can experience that, I can relate to it, I want it to go a certain way, but if it doesn't, it doesn't affect me as deeply, whereas, you know, Patriots Red Sox, it really does. And that's an aspect of fandom, sports fandom, that I think is important, this connection to identity, particularly with the partisan fan. The contrast, as you mentioned in the paper, is to the purist fan, the fan who maybe has more of an aesthetic appreciation of the game, or just has a different way of relating to sport, but they're not necessarily a fan of a particular team or a particular person through time. And so I think with the partisan fan, though, the sense of identity, the sense of connection to your own personal narrative, I think is an essential part of being a fan. And that can connect into the moral value of fandom as well, because it becomes an important way of expressing yourself. And so I can see that being, important part of one's well-being, one's sense of themselves, and that being a sports fan becomes a part of that. So that, and you know, you didn't mention that in the paper because your focus was more on the value of achievement. So what do you think about this, the identity connection, and is that a potential intrinsic value for a sports fan?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. So this sense of being a fan, this experience you've just described, is really exactly what was motivating me to ask these very questions about whether or not I should become a fan, because I don't have this. And I was wondering, you know, should I cultivate it? Because it seems like I'm really missing out. It becomes a huge part of people's identity when they're fans, just in the very way that you've described. But now, whether or not there's any good in having this particular thing, being a fan as part of your identity as opposed to something else, I'm not entirely sure, but it is interesting to note how difficult it is to cultivate this kind of deeply rooted partisan fanship mm-hmm. that you describe. And what it's led me to think is that it may not even be the sort of thing that you can add to yourself if you don't already have it sort of instilled in your character early on. Because I think it's so deeply rooted in feelings and in sort of personal connections and our personal history, that it's the sort of thing that just isn't, you don't have that much control over it, it seems. It's very recalcitrant. I think that's a real feature of being a fan, is that it's just how you feel about the team, and it's this deep personal connection in that way. And often those kinds of feelings just aren't really subject to being removed or cultivated if they're not there already. And so there's this sort of, I guess you could maybe describe it as an is-ought problem, where you can't really go around artificially instilling in yourself this deeply rooted fandom. I mean, you can, but maybe for that reason, it's not so bad that the conclusion that I came to in my paper was that there's this value theoretic tension in being a fan. Maybe it's not so bad anyway, because there is really no good question to be asked. Ought I become a fan? Because it's the real kind of fandom that I'm curious about isn't the sort of thing that you can artificially build up, or at least it's very difficult to do it.
Yeah,
I don't know. What do you think about that? How is your attempt to becoming an English football fan? Do you think it will be successful? Are you going to be a real fan?
Well, that's a good question. I think it's proceeding successfully. Will I ever be as deep or hardcore of a soccer fan as a real soccer fan? I'd probably say not. Primarily because there's too much else competing with my time.
Right.
So, you know, I think there's just too many different things. Well, you know, there's not even just considering sport, but the rest of my life. But then even just within sport fandom, there's too many other things to focus on that sort of take pride of place at this point, that it's hard to see how that can get up there high enough. But I think it could continue to be and grow. I mean, I like that idea of it being recalcitrant, because I think it is. I don't think it's impossible to develop it, because I can. It just seems like the kind of thing that can't be done artificially, like you said. It can't just be, okay, I'm going to be a fan now. It has to be the kind of thing that you grow into, and it's in a way, like Nick Dixon, who talks about the purist partisan distinction.
Mm-hmm.
He talks in that paper also about a comparison of sports fandom to romantic love. In some ways he might overplay that, but there does seem to be a sense of a process of falling in love with your team, with the sport, that isn't something that can just happen artificially, but you have to make the right kind of connection and it has to be at the right time. Right? Same with, you know, a partner. When you meet them, you might meet them at the wrong time, and it doesn't work out. You know, even if you're the right fit, it doesn't seem, it might not work because of other circumstances. So it's got to be the right time and the right team, the right fit, and then you got to get to know each other. You know, and over time, I think you can develop that love and appreciation for it. It just grows on you over time. And I see that in myself. You know, it's as a kid, I wasn't as big a fan, as I am now. And it's something that over 30 years or so, has grown. And there's probably lots of unique psychological reasons why that's happened for me. And it's probably a different story for several others. But I think, as you were saying, it is connected into your personal experiences, your connections with family and friends, connections into your community. I mean, I think one reason why my fandom has developed stronger over the years is because I grew up in Boston. Now, I haven't lived in Boston for 20 years. This is a way of connecting back to sort of my roots. And so by connecting in with the Boston teams and following them, reading about them, watching them, paying attention to them, it's a way sort of being part of that community still. So again, it becomes a part of this identification of the self, or part of your self identity, and a way of expressing that, and a way of experiencing yourself that can be very valuable.
Yeah, well, I guess it can be valuable. It sort of depends on how it gets laid out. The question is, I suppose, the question that is sort of bothering me is it so valuable that if you don't have it, if you aren't already a fan of something, are you kind of missing out? Is there some sort of piece of my identity that my character is sort of not as good as it could be if I had some kind of affiliation like this? And it's hard to see exactly why that would be, but at least in the way that you've just nicely described, we can see how being a fan can be important and sort of and play some important role in life. But it's also, there's nothing sort of intrinsic about being a fan, it seems, that does this in an irreplaceable or inimitable way. It seems that it's an important part of identity, but not the most important part, and one that can play certain roles, such as connecting you to your hometown and things like that. But it doesn't need to do that. After all, lots of people are fans of teams that sort of arose in some more or less arbitrary way, and they don't really have a deep affiliation to the geographical location of the team or anything like that. And yet they still care deeply, and it still plays this central role in their, or a role, if not a central role, in their character.
Absolutely. And I do think that I wouldn't necessarily use the term intrinsic, but I do think that the value that we're talking about here, the value of being a sports fan, is, in a sense, an optional value. If you don't have it, in and of itself, I don't think that there's a loss there. I do think that you need outlets for expressing and building and experiencing your identity. But that I think that there are any number of ways to do that at deep levels, and sport is one way. Participating in sport is another. Being a fan is a whole other one. Participating in other kinds of activities can allow one to express their identity and as well as experience it, and see themselves as a certain kind of person in the world. And so I don't think it has to be through being a sports fan. So I do think it's that's why I call it like an optional thing. You know, like, I think of it like you need a career in life, right? You need some way, both instrumentally just to earn, you know, wealth and so on to be able to maintain yourself and those that might be dependent on you, but also to give you a sense of purpose in life and a way of experiencing achievement and so on. So lots of good value in having a career. But what career you choose, that is more optional, right? Depending on your personal history, your interests, what kinds of things you're good at, where you are in time and space, right? I mean, 200 years ago, you didn't have many options for your career. It's more of a modern thing. And so where you are in your life and in the world is going to play an important part of that. So I see that everyone needs some sense of connection, some sense of narrative about who they are and how they fit into the world, and then different ways of finding that out, and being a sports fan as one component of those, but not a necessary component. Does that make sense?
No, right on. It's one thing that you could do with your time that's part of your character and becomes part of your identity. And I think at the very least what I learned in writing this paper about the Amari Bonin bonus and being a fan is that at least it's not intrinsically bad, all things considered, to be a fan. So there is something that's also good about doing it. So it's not just that it's a neutral part mm-hmm. of people's characters who are fans, but it can be something that's good. It is itself worthwhile because it involves this appreciation of success. And so that, I think, that's probably more interesting than, and it might seem at first glance, because I think most philosophers, probably no philosophers that are going to listen to this podcast, but most philosophers, I would say, aren't sports fans and would be inclined to think that it's the sort of activity that really is just a total waste of time. And so I think actually what we've learned is that it's not a waste of time. It does have this nice value theoretic feature to it. So it can be good.
Absolutely.
That's kind of
I get that.
Easy to overlook.
You can imagine that. I run into that attitude quite a bit. It's sort of like, what's your philosopher of sport? Why? What's the value in that? Isn't it just a pastime? It's just mere leisure. It's at best a neutral. And you know, I think that's an unfortunate view, because like you said, there is a lot of value there. I mean, there are certainly some negatives too, but there is a value. And one of the things that I liked about your paper was, you know, the attempt to try to flesh out what that value is in terms of achievement and of value and success. So maybe, you mentioned that a few times, maybe you could kind of focus a little bit on that or give us a succinct statement of what that value is.
Now, which value is this? The achievement?
Yeah, what is it that is the good that we love in sports? So winning, but then how does that really flesh out?
Yeah, good. So I think that it's achievement is the central focus of the good that we appreciate in sports. Now, I think there's actually a lot more going on in sports that's there for us to appreciate, which can also make being a fan good. But I do think that achievement is something that can be sort of easy to overlook when we think about sports, and yet on the other hand, it's very easy to acknowledge that achievement is a source of intrinsic value. I think most people think that achievement makes your life better, and we strive for all kinds of achievement, and so insofar as that's a part of sports, athletic excellence, and winning games, winning at sports, then there's a good there that we can appreciate as sports fans.
Mm-hmm. So one question about that would be that certainly winning is compatible with poor play, with lack of achievement, and that achievement is compatible with losing. So you're not making an identification between just winning and achievement, right? So there's something more going on, right?
Yes, that's right. So I think for the most of the time when you win, it's going to be an achievement, but it seems that it's quite easy to lose and yet still for that to be an achievement, for the way that the game was played and so on, for that to be an achievement, I guess it all hangs on, well, what do we mean by achievement? So I have this idea that achievement is something that is difficult and involves a certain amount of skill or competence. And so insofar as whatever kind of activity is sufficiently difficult for you to do and done sufficiently well in terms of skill and competence, then it's an achievement. So, of course, you need not win in order to have achieved something. We might think of running a marathon as a really good example of this. Mm-hmm. Most people who run marathons don't win. But right. Certainly, it seems a paradigmatic achievement to run a marathon. So winning at whatever activity it is that you're engaged in is not essential for achievements at all.
Right, and I think that's true. But then turning that back then on the fan and what a fan wants and what a fan desires and what it is that they love, there does seem to be a breakdown there, just in terms of the fan still wanting their team to win, putting aside, cheating and dishonorable sort of play, but just, poor play, they're not playing well, the game is ugly, or it's just there's not really a lot of success, but you just happen to be slightly more successful than the other team. I was trying to way to put that avoided more double negatives. but basically you played poorly, but the other team played that much more poorly, and yet the fan is still going to be happy at least with the win. They may recognize, yeah, that was an ugly game, but hey, a win is a win. And so then the sense of achievement as the thing that we value becomes disconnected. Now, maybe those are just exceptions to the general case, or maybe they're pointing that maybe there's something more or something different at least that the fan is concerned with, and in terms of the win itself, not necessarily achievement per se.
Okay, good. Yeah. So with this sort of ugly win that you've described, now it seems that I'm inclined to say that it probably is an achievement anyway. It's just not a very impressive one. Or
okay.
There were a lot of, I guess an ugly achievement, you might say. So that's one thing that can be said about what the fan is appreciating there. But there is this other funny puzzle of whether or not what makes the win special,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the loss, especially if the loss also involves an achievement of playing a game well or what have you. And I'm not quite sure what characterizes the value of a win over the value of a loss.
Mm-hmm.
And both can be achievements. I'm really curious if you have any insight about this. So I guess that one thing can be said is that winning a game is attaining the goal that is internal to the structure of the game. So it's part of the criteria of success that the game itself sets up. So it's built-in success conditions that mm-hmm. games have. And so many activities are characterized by this kind of structure where they have a built-in success condition. And one might think that wherever this kind of teleological structure occurs and then its goal is realized, that is instantiating this kind of good. And so insofar as winning a game instantiates it, then it's instantiating a good that fans love and when it's their team and hate when it's the other team.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. Do you have any thoughts about that?
I do. I don't know how well-formed they are, but I think one aspect, I mean, I like what you have to say there in terms of there is just the internal success condition, and so it is a kind of achievement, even if it's a minimal achievement or a weak achievement or an ugly achievement, as we've said. But it you know, just trying to think of it from the fan's experience of it, I go back to that, to the identity thing, that because that being a fan of that, of the Patriots or the Red Sox, I'll stick with the Red Sox because baseball starts up tonight, I guess. And so being a fan of the Red Sox is a part of my identity. And so a win is, they're not well-formed thoughts. So a win is, in a way, an affirmation of my identity, and a loss is a challenge to it. And so that's why, in part, you feel the shame, the embarrassment, the pain of the loss, is because it's sort of an attack on your identity, an attack on your sense of self. Whereas the win is an affirmation of who you are and what you've done for your life in terms of rooting for this team. Okay, they've won. That affirms what I've done. They've lost. Have I wasted my life? To put it in really blunt terms. And because I think that's a sense of that just emotionally, that's what fans sometimes experience. I mean, I've had conversations with friends after games going, oh man, why did we waste that 3 hours watching that game? It was, you know, it wasn't fun. It was a poorly played game. We ended up losing anyway. You know, it just feels like a waste. But yet, you know, 1 week goes by and we're back at it again. And I think it's because it's a sense of iterant identity expression. And so the loss is a challenge to the identity, and the win is an affirmation of it. And that might explain why the sense of success or achievement isn't quite tied in as much for at least experientially from the fans' perspective. They're not, oh, what a wonderful achievement the team has today. I mean, they can talk about that, and certainly just like you can talk about the aesthetics of the game of, yeah, we lost, but, you know, they played really well. But there still is the pain of the loss, even if you're acknowledging their achievement. And I wonder if the identity or that sense of narrative about your connection to the team is a part of that.
Yeah, this is the aspect of being a fan that to the non-sports fan such as myself is just totally baffling. It's amazing. I you know, I understand what you're saying. I've seen it. I've witnessed it. But it's almost impossible to get yourself to feel that way if you don't already feel that way.
Yeah.
And it's actually, hearing you say this is making me wonder if, maybe the way that I have been characterizing being a sports fan just isn't quite right, because it's not getting at this deep personal identification with the team, where the team is this representation of yourself. It is part of yourself. If you contrast that with, say, being a fan of a rock band or something like that, you don't see, you know, the Rolling Stones as an extension of yourself in the same way, where, you know, you might listen to the music and love the music, but it's not, your own happiness doesn't hang on their success as a rock band, you might think, whereas it does for a fan. There is this other, you might imagine, I'm sure people have said things like this. It's like, you know, your children or something going forth and somehow representing you and all you've done.
Yeah.
And the team is like this. It represents something about you in the world out there, in a way that being a fan of a rock band or a musician or some kind of performer doesn't have that kind of connection.
Yeah, even where there is a deeper connection, like with Deadheads or Parrotheads and so on, where people really do make the band, their fandom of the band, a part of themselves, there's still something different. Although I think you're getting closer when you're talking about someone like a Deadhead who, you know, travels around and follows the Grateful Dead. But there isn't a sense of their own success or their own identity tied into it.
Right on. There's this devotion and loyalty that we see with being a sports fan. But there isn't this, and identity insofar as it can be an integral part of your character and your life narrative or what have you. But there isn't this other thing where it's somehow the team, when they are playing, represents you in a way. Although, of course, I imagine it's hard to imagine what the people on the team, what the players themselves think about that. Do they think of themselves as representing all the fans and all the life stories of all the fans? Probably not. I think it's a one-way street on this one.
Yeah, largely.
I'm not sure what that says, though.
Yeah, I think some acknowledge the devotion of the fans and recognize that that's a part of why they are doing what they're doing. But a lot of athletes, I think, probably aren't really thinking too much of that. That is something I am curious too, particularly when they change sides, you know, when they go over to the dark side, to the other team, you know, and the shifting fan bases and how they must experience that to go from being, you know, a demigod in the city to being the enemy, you know, public enemy number one. That's got to be an emotionally interesting experience for the athlete to think, well, they loved me yesterday, now they hate me. I don't understand.
I find that kind of thing also just so fascinating because, of course, most of the applies. Many other people in philosophy of sports have noted when they talk about teams and fans that, of course, most of the people on the team don't have any sort of geographical connection to the city or country. Well, country, I guess, that's a different story, but to the city that they're representing, which is just so fascinating because then they become the representative for many people of the city in this way.
Yeah, I mean, after the marathon bombing last year in Boston, the Red Sox and then particularly David Ortiz really became, you know, this symbol of the city and symbol of the city coming together after that tragedy. And, you know, David Ortiz is Latin American. He's from Dominican Republic and has a very thick accent. But he became the vision of the city or the image of the city. And so that's part of what you're talking about as well.
Exactly. Yes. No, it's fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, fandom is a weird thing. I mean, I that's what, you know, really attracted me to your papers is, on one hand, you're trying to figure it out because you're trying to figure out if you want to be a fan. And then I'm interested because I'm trying to figure out why I am a fan and why it's such an important part of my life. And is it too much? Is it something that I need to tone down maybe because it takes up too much of my focus or my concerns or my energy or, you know, the psychic energy of just, you know, spending Monday in a daze because your team lost? That seems really stupid. and yet emotionally it's there and there's not a lot you can do with that. Maybe short of some years of therapy. One aspect of the paradox does seem to turn on what the conception of value is. Not the value in sport per se, but just the conception of value period. Because it does seem that the paradox arises because of kind of agent neutrality of the good, that the good that we love or hate is something that is neutral between agents. Or rather, that it's just something that is good or bad, irrespective of its relationship to the agent, right? Is that sort of what is generating the paradox? Because if it's something that it's good to love the good and hate the bad, and what's good or bad is, in some sense, relative to the agent doing the loving or the hating, then that paradox might not arise in the sense of, well, the good of the win of my opponent really isn't a good for me, and so in terms of me not liking it, it's not an instance of hating the good. Did that make sense there?
I think so. So I'm taking this principle, the Amare Bonum Bonus, to concern mostly good in this objective way that you've described, where it's agent neutral. Mm-hmm. And I take it that the success in achievement or the failure in losing, those are indeed objective goods. They might also have some other kind of relative, they might be good or bad for some people. But I've only been sort of thinking about it in this way, where they are also just good on the one hand and bad on the other hand.
Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily see agent relativity as being non-objective. And this may, we may be playing some semantics. The value that's at stake always seems to be a value to an agent for some set of reasons. And that those reasons can be objective reasons. That they're not necessarily subjective, but that they can be objective, that they play a certain role in the agent's life in an important way that is independent from what the agent might think about them or desire about them.
Yes. No, I think I see what you're getting at. So if we thought that all things that are good are either good or bad for somebody, so if that's what we mean by this agent relativity of value, then there's this question of, well, if the win is good for somebody, how does that play out in terms of this amare bonum bonus? If I hate a good that isn't good for me, how does that kind of play out? So is this the kind of question that you wanted to ask?
Yeah. That was clearer than I put it.
I think what I was assuming is that the achievements and the success on the one hand and failure on the other aren't just good for the achiever or bad for the loser. They are goods and bads simpliciter. Now, I realize not everybody sees good that way, so you might think that there is no such value that works this way, and perhaps, in fact, success and failure are only possible to understand as being good or bad for the people to whom they are successes and failures. But I don't, I think that the things that I've said would nevertheless, in terms of the amare bonum bonus and the value of being a fan, would play out in just the same way. So, in that, insofar as the win is good for the winners, the amare bonum bonus would still tell us that there is some good in loving and appreciating that good.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that if we're going to understand this in terms of good for, it might be good for me to appreciate that which is good for you. And there are loads of uncontroversial instances of this kind of thing. So if, if you are happy, that's good for you, and I appreciate your happiness, that would be an instance of the amare bonum bonus. So my appreciation of your happiness would be good for me. Does that, so it's still, so even if we understand success and failure in terms of this, in agent relative terms of good for and bad for, we can still capture this, the little paradox about being a sports fan.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I need to think about that more. I'm not sure that the paradox stays, but I see the direction you're going, and I think potentially you're right, but I do need to think about it more. But that's the sign of a really interesting good paper, is that it raises lots of questions and makes you think about these different issues, and that's why I liked your paper, and I'm glad you came on and talked about it. I hope you have some plans for the paper in terms of maybe trying to get it out there in some way.
Oh yeah, I think I should probably do that. It's been a lot of fun to think about, and I think also over the course of our discussion, I feel like I've, for myself, also raised many more questions than I even knew were there. So this has been really fruitful, and I hope to work on the paper again, and maybe one day it will see the light of day.
Great. I hope so. Well, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
A quick announcement that on April 25th on the campus of Rockford University, we will be hosting the 3rd Annual Sports Studies Symposium. More information on that can be found at my website, sportsethicist.com. Also on the website is a new feature called Ask the Sports Ethicist. So if you have any questions about sports ethics or philosophy of sport, send them to me at sportsethicist@gmail.com, and I'll do my best to answer them online in a blog post or on the podcast. This has been the Sports Ethicist Show.
You can find us at sportsethicist.com, Facebook, and Twitter, and you can email the show at sportsethicist@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening.